Hey, it's Doug here. Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. This is one of those intros that I've been testing out, and I'll try to tell some stories. So at the time that I'm recording this, which is only a few weeks ahead of time, I have been traveling a decent amount here in January. So it's the end of January, the day that I'm recording this intro portion. So in early January, we went to Estes Park, which, for people that don't know, the small town that sort of leads into, it's the gateway town for the Rocky Mountain National Park, basically. And I have a special fondness for Estes Park. It's where I lived when I worked in the Rocky Mountain National Park in 2002 and 3. It was a long time ago, of course. That was when I was in college, had a full, beautiful head of hair back then. That's not even true. I had a little bit of hair. I had more hair back then, but not that much, if I'm being honest with you. So anyway, Estes Park is awesome. We went just after the new year, so it wasn't very crowded at all. It was very cool, very fun. And we wanted to sort of, you know, check out the town. We stayed right at the end of Main Street there so we could walk down and check things out. And we wanted to be close to the Rocky Mountain National Park. So the closest couple entrances right there are, you know, they're like 15 minutes away or something like that, maybe even less, maybe 10 minutes away. Of course, once you get to the entrance of the park, you have to drive to whatever trailhead you're going to, but it was fantastic. And it was actually a little bit warm for that time of year. It was just right around, I think, like 20 degrees Fahrenheit to maybe like 30 or so. And it wasn't too windy. So we were actually able to hike and get in the park and have like a really nice time without it being like super cold and freezing. Of course, your mileage may vary. Like, you go to one portion of the park and it might be super windy and cloudy. You go to another portion of the park and it might be sunny and no wind, and it feels, you know, really quite warm for how cold the temperature is. Anyway, we had a nice time there and it was fun. And in an upcoming episode, I'll tell you about another, also a short adventure. Again, I've actually been able to spend time out in the mountains quite a bit so far this year. And one cool thing is higher altitude elevation in Estes Park. I think it's around maybe like 7,000, 8,000 feet. And here in Longmont, it's about 5,000. So it's just a little bit more, but it's enough to help your body sort of compensate and send whatever signal to build more red blood cells. So you're a little bit more acclimated to higher elevations, which 99% of you don't care about, but there's a handful of you that do care about hiking at higher elevations and stuff like that. And it is helpful to spend some time up at elevation. Otherwise, super cool, very fun. And one little like downside is a lot of the shops in the town is sort of like closed because it's off season. In the summer, it's like a Disney World there. There's tons of people there. But in the middle of the winter, right after the holidays, people are back at work. There's not nearly as many people there. The thing is, we're not going into like a million shops. We don't need like every store to be open. We don't need every restaurant to be open. We stayed at an Airbnb, so we cooked in most of the time. We ate out a couple of times, and it was a blast. So pretty fun. Now, one sort of mini downside here, I do not sleep well at a higher elevation, and it's compounded when I'm hot. And unfortunately, while the mattress at the place was pretty comfortable, I laid down and I was like, this feels pretty nice. It was a like a foam type mattress, which essentially it felt like I was sleeping on a bed of like magma, hot magma that was reflecting. It was absorbing the heat from me and then reflecting it back. And I was like, I was so miserable. I did not sleep well there until we actually like opened the window, and it was super cold outside. Opened the window like at night and just tried to get some kind of air in there so it would cool down a little bit. And the thing is, I wish they would upgrade to a Ghost Bed, who is one of our sponsors. So Ghost Bed, they are great partner. They've been working with us for quite a while. They specialize in having mattresses that have some cooling technology in there. Now, I don't know all the patents and the technology behind it, but it does have some cooling layers in there. And in fact, we have a Lux mattress. It has the coolest rating. It's a little bit softer than the Classic. Turns out I'm fairly robust as far as dealing with like a firm mattress or a soft one or whatever, as long as I'm not hot. If I'm hot, I'm losing my freaking mind. So the thing is, if you're unsure like what mattress you want, because you know Ghostbed has several different options for you, you can go through and take their sleep quiz. I think it takes like 2 or 3 minutes. It asks you some questions, but don't worry. They have a 101 night at home sleep trial. So you could test it out, make sure you feel really good. 101 nights to test it out and see. Of course, they have a full range of products. They have adjustable bases. They have bedding. They have pillows, anything you need to sleep better. You can save 50% at checkout with the code MileHighFi, or you can go to ghostbed.com/MileHighFi, and it does support the show. So if you are looking for a way to help support the show, head over to Ghostbed and let them know that you dig it, and well, order something over there. Please check it out. Finally, one last announcement here. So Lynn, the guest of the show today, she has a free guide. So it's 5 ways to simplify your travel reward strategy. So I think I have that right. That's the one we're supposed to have. Anyway, you could follow the link. She also has a course, which I actually kind of press her on, because this information, like a lot of information, is free out there. And I wanted to ask, you know, a tough question. And actually, I paused the recording and I asked Lynn if I could ask her a tough question. Why should people pay for a course when they can get information for free? And I let her answer that. That said, I am telling you, she has a course out there. MileHighFi is an affiliate. If you end up purchasing it, MileHighFi will get a commission. Again, help support the show, buy t-shirts, buy stickers and stuff like that, that I typically give out at places like Economy or otherwise. So if you see me at Economy, I will likely have a stack of stickers that I'm trying to give away. There's some, I think there are sort of a limited sort of collector style, because right before Carl quit the show, I got hundreds of stickers with both of our faces on it. So there's these really sought after stickers that I want to give out. So if you're at Economy, be sure to ask for them. So anyway, Lynn, she has a free download. There's a link. She has a course. We'll also link to that. And that's a couple ways you could support the show. And finally, now really finally, so I'm testing different ways to do intros and ads and different stuff. And I do know when I listen to a show, I sure do love it when they just say, hello, this is whatever show. I'm this guy. I'm interviewing this other person. And they start immediately. I sure do dig that. However, sometimes we have to put some other intro things in here. I am trying to tell hopefully entertaining stories. Also, I know some people hate ads. So if I put it at the beginning, people could just blast through it, and I shouldn't be telling you that, but that's the truth. If you've heard these ads, you know, you want to blast through. I try to alter them up. I try to keep you guessing overall. But anyway, let's get to the show. I'm rambling on enough. Basically, if you have feedback on this, you could shoot me an email. My email address is in the description, and let's get to the show. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today we're going to talk about flying for free, travel in general, and I have my new friend Lynn Mettler of Families Fly Free. We will focus on flying, earning and using points, getting started, and a bit of a crackdown on airline fees and getting compensated for delays, and a lot more. So Lynn and I were just having like sort of a deeper conversation that will actually play on the sound check portion at the very end about online business and some other stuff like that. But we're going to get started with one of the great stories that you have, Lynn. So can you talk about how you've been able to fly your family? Sounds like for free, a family of four, mm-hmm. and you take several trips per year, and you've been doing this pretty consistently for the last several years. And I'll just let you tell that story.
Yeah, so I happened into the travel reward space in 2015. I'm a longtime travel writer, and I was pitched a story by a couple who was traveling the world using miles and points, but not flying to earn those points. So that was the big eye-opener for me. I always thought, well, duh, you have to fly to earn frequent flyer miles, right? So the idea that there were other ways to earn them was interesting. And I was a longtime couponer, so I thought this is like couponing, but you get free trips, you know, instead of free boxes of cereal or whatever at the grocery store. So I was intrigued immediately, and I thought, well, I need to figure this out. And so, I mean, over the years, I realized I'd figured out a pretty simple way to do this for a whole family. And I wanted to share that with other people because there's so much information out there about travel rewards that I think it's overwhelming and it gets way too complicated and people have too many cards in their wallet, and that I'm not a fan of any of that. And I thought, I've like done this with just a couple cards, and I focus on flying Southwest a lot. I think you can just go so many more places for fewer points with them. And so that's just kind of what I realized. Like, okay, we were flying 6 times a year, 4 people for free. And we went from not being able to afford to fly, we would maybe take a car trip once a year, to, you know, going to this flying 6, we've done as much as 10 times in a year flying for free. So if we can do it, like anybody can do this.
All right. And I think we may just like jump right in. So I generally, like, I've accumulated points. And when I first got a job, I was in consulting. So I traveled every week, and they tell you, hey, you know, get this card. And then quickly on some of the projects, I was around, these are a lot of type A consulting type folks. So they were doing some of the craziest stuff. And they would switch hotels in the middle of the week to get multiple stays. And like, they were getting hundreds of thousands of points. But it was certainly, there was a spectrum. And I was around a lot of people that were like earning so many points. Again, we were flying 2 times a week. So like, we were getting a lot of points airline wise. So I do have a question from Neil over in the Facebook group. So this is a common one. I'm just going to read it verbatim here. So I'm very much a newbie as far as travel rewards, but I'm interested in adding it to my FI skill set in 2025. What is the biggest bang for the buck in terms of where to start? I know, you know, you mentioned Southwest, and a lot of people are a little bit familiar with a companion pass, but he's wondering like if that's a good route or what else to do from there. So again, I'll leave it wide open. I don't pay too much attention other than like having a couple points that, or a couple cards that I can earn some points, and then don't really pay too much attention. So I'll turn it over. Where should Neil get started with this?
So yeah, I mean, I think in terms of airlines, if you are okay with flying Southwest, and I think they're going to be adding assigned seats here, you can actually fly those flights in 2026. But so I think that's going to make them much more appealing to a lot more people. So I definitely recommend Southwest, because you mentioned the Southwest Companion Pass. That really is the best deal in travel, because you can bring one person with you for free. You have to pay the $5.60 per way taxes, but airfare is free on as many flights as you want to take while you have that pass. And we have a system where you earn it for 2 full years at a time, and you always have one. So someone in your group is never paying any points. They're never paying any dollars. That's a tremendous savings right there. And the way their system works, you can pay so many fewer points per flight. And that solves the problem of needing to have so many cards and so many points, is if you can fly on fewer points, right? You can really stretch the points that you do earn across more flights. So like, we flew 4 people to Hawaii for 30,000 points total, for example. Whereas most other airlines, you're going to spend about 25,000 round trip within the US for one person to go anywhere that's beyond driving distance. So you really can take, you know, 3-4 times the number of trips on Southwest as you can on Delta. And I have no affiliation with Southwest. Let me just say that. I just truly believe it's the best way to do it. So that's one thing I would say. The other thing that's super key to keeping it simple, and that you could just do this, is pick a flexible travel card and focus your spending on that. You do not need to have cards in all these different airlines and every hotel chain. you need to have a flexible card that works in different programs. So I really like the Chase Sapphire cards. I like the Capital One Venture cards. Amex has a system. Citi has a system. So you want to pick a system that works well with, you know, who you like to fly and maybe you're at the hotel you prefer. But these flexible cards, like the Chase cards, you can transfer points to different partners, but they also have their own portal where you can book anything pretty much. And so if you focus on that and collect points in a flexible system, then that serves all your travel purposes. And that's the key to keeping it simple, I think.
Okay. So let's back up a little bit and I'll ask some specific questions. So for people that don't know, can you explain the Southwest seating situation? I've only flown Southwest maybe like 3 or 4 times, something like that. I grew up in Atlanta, so it was like a lot of stuff on Delta.
Delta.
Yeah. And then I'm in Denver now, so often it's like Frontier flight. So I literally wasn't a good option generally. And only occasionally have either the price has been cheaper and or the flight time, right? There's always some constraints that we have to think about. So I've only flown Southwest. I was very nervous because I heard about the seating situation. Can you please explain what it was and or is right now and what it will be going to?
Yeah, so Southwest is the only airline that doesn't assign you seats ahead of time. And so that makes some people nervous to not know where they're going to be sitting. And if you're flying with a family, that's a big one too. You're afraid somehow you're going to get separated from your kids. So, but we've been doing this for 10 years. Now my kids are, you know, pretty much grown and they're fine, but we've never had to not have a parent sit with a child ever. So basically the way it works right now, but this is going to change beginning in 2026, is you get a boarding order based on when you check in for the flight, and you can check in 24 hours ahead of time. And then based on your boarding order, that's when you get on the plane and when you get to pick your seat. So unless you're at the very back, if you're at the very back, you're going to end up in a middle seat between two people. No good. But there's a lot of strategies that we show you, you know, how to get the best possible seat. And there's things you can upgrade to that let you get earlier boarding orders and that type of thing. So, but they will be moving to assigned seating in 2026. You're supposed to be able to book those flights beginning mid to end of this year. And so then you will know ahead of time where you're going to sit. And I think this is a good move on their part personally, just because that's the number one thing I hear from people about why they won't fly Southwest is the no assigned seating. But it turns out that's the fastest way to board a plane, interestingly.
Right. That makes sense. And you mentioned some people were concerned they may not be able to sit with their kids, but other people would find that a benefit to not have their kids, I'm sure.
But especially, yeah, I don't know. Okay. I know. Then some passenger on the plane is going to, you know, be stuck next to your kid for the whole flight.
Yeah. That would end up being me. So, okay, perfect. How do you feel about the change? So you mentioned it's probably a good move for them generally, but you acknowledge that it's probably the fastest way to board the plane because people just sit down, they put their stuff up and, you know, just stop messing around.
Right. I'm happy for it because there is a little bit of stress in that you have to check in 24 hours ahead of time if you haven't taken advantage of some of these upgrades. And I've been doing this for 10 years and I can't focus long enough on the screen. I get distracted, then 10 seconds have gone by and now I'm in C group, you know. Yeah. So I'm glad to have that eliminated and know for sure where I'll be sitting.
All right. And then do you have any strategies? So you sit down, and I know they'll be changing this. So you sit down. Do you have a way where you like discourage people from sitting near you?
Oh gosh, I know there's all these stories of people that put a dirty tissue on the seat next to them, or you know, these kind of silly things, so that people, and definitely people do that. But here's what I found is, okay, no one wants the middle seat. So as long as you get on and you get an aisle or a window, pretty much that middle seat is going to be open for whoever's next. I mean, you're going to usually have boarding orders all together anyway, but you know, for your family member to come and sit next to you, because the middle seat's going to be the last one to fill up. So we have a family of four. So we've always tried to sit one parent, one child, one parent, one child. And if you ever were to find like, you can't find two seats together with you and your child, you just ask someone, hi, would you mind switching with me? Someone's going to switch with you. And if they don't, you get the flight attendant and say, hi, can you help me find okay. someone to switch? Truly, no one wants to sit next to your kid for the whole flight. They want you to sit next to your kid. So somebody will switch, you know. And I think I've seen that happen maybe once, but.
Okay, got it. Perfect. So I've heard a lot about the companion pass, and it's an amazing deal. Like you said, it's probably the best value in flying that you can get. How are they able to offer that? I'm always skeptical if it sounds too good to be true. Like, how does this work financially? Is it just like a small number of people doing it? How are they able to do this deal and very few other airlines can even come close?
Well, that's a question I don't really know the answer to, how they're able to financially make that work. But it isn't too good to be true. It really does work. The only thing that I would say that I can see from my perspective, it really promotes loyalty with Southwest. I mean, we almost never fly anyone unless we're going to Europe or something like that, where they do not fly, though you will be able to use them to fly to Europe in 2026. But so I fly them always, and you end up paying ancillary fees when you do that. So like, I might pay to get us an upgraded A1 through 15 boarding order, for example, but they don't charge for bags. So it's not like they're making bag fees either, but they are right now. That's why we're seeing this shift, is they are struggling with profitability. So they have very high revenue, increased revenue over the last years, but their costs have gone way up in terms of labor. And so they are trying that's why they're, going to be charging for certain, they're going to have extra legroom seating as well. So they'll be charging for that. They're adding some of these more ancillary fees to try to help get them to profitability. And that is the one thing we know people want, is assigned seating. So I think that's a smart move to make that the thing they're charging for.
All right. Yeah, obviously. Tough question. I don't know. But it is such a good deal.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get into some of the nuts and bolts here and talk about your process for planning. And one thing that I found in the years that I've tried to redeem points is sometimes take advantage of deals or whatever. You're limited with your options and you have to be a little flexible, and sometimes it just doesn't work out, or there's not enough seats available for that class of points, or I have no idea how they do it on the back end. So how do you plan and book these trips? And you could make up some scenario that is a good generalized one that could help people out.
Well, let's look at going to Europe, for example. So I think what you're talking about there is trying to book a reward seat. So a lot of airlines, they make reward seats available on certain flights based on how sold out they are, et cetera. So if there's no reward seats on that flight, you're not getting on it, right? Southwest, on the other hand, and more airlines have moved to this, like I think Virgin Atlantic just moved to it, where you can book any flight at any time in miles or points. There's no checking for hours for a reward seat to open up, or trying to shift to different days where there is a seat open. You can get on any flight. It might cost you more points, but I find the way I teach it and the way I teach people to earn points, which is really by spending on the right card, not by opening a whole bunch of cards and earning the bonus, they have enough points. So if they need to spend more to fly over the New Year's to Florida, they can do that. And it's not a big deal, because most of the time they're paying fewer points on things. So like flying to Europe, I prefer not to do things like, collect Singapore Airlines points and then call United to book it with United, because it's fewer points to do it that way. Like, that is all super complicated. And if you like that, great, you can do it. But my approach is, I'm just going to use flexible points, and I'm going to book any airline that I want. I'm going to book any flight that I want. I'm going to book any class of service that I want if I have the points to do it. So like, for example, I just booked us to London for spring break. Crazy low prices right now, everyone, to Europe. The lowest was like $400 or something round trip from New York. I booked us from New York. I'll use Southwest to get us to New York, and then we'll hop over. But anyway, so I just used my Capital One card to pay for two of our seats. I charged it directly to Delta, booked the daytime flight that I wanted. I'm thrilled that I don't have to take an overnight flight to Europe. I knew that had to exist, so it does. We're going to fly at 9 in the morning, get there at 8 at night. And then I just use my Capital One miles to pay for that charge. It doesn't get much simpler than that, really.
Okay. And I like that. And before we hit record, I preface by saying I don't like the complicated stuff or over-optimizing. So I enjoy that approach where it's just a little simpler. You got me thinking about myself a little bit, but also a lot of the audience were sort of savers and perhaps we hoard points and we're like, we're saving points to like make sure we're doing something good. Like maybe we did get a card to get the bonus and we got this bonus and we have like 150,000 points. We're hanging on to them. Is there like a depreciation of the points? Can you talk about hoarding?
Don't hoard your points. Use your points. I'm a big proponent of using your points because they absolutely do lose value over time. I had someone at some point that had a million Southwest points. I was like, what are you doing? Like, your goal is not to collect as many points as possible. It's to spend them. And I've had some people too, who like, they're just are anxious unless they have 500,000 points in every account, right? So on my system, the way I teach it, you are not going to have a bunch of points in your account. You're going to be spending them, but you're going to at the same time be replenishing them. And so it's just a constant process, spend, replenish all at the same time. But I don't ever see a need to, I say, if you can use them right now to save money and you do something else with that money, spend it, save it, invest it, whatever, you might as well, because that's money in your pocket, you know?
Perfect. Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. I'm doing it wrong. I hoard points. I did for years before. And then when I redeemed them, it was great. And I was like, oh yeah, I got to use these every now and then. So I have another question from Kevin from the Facebook group. Are there websites or services that charge to take someone's points per organization, like cards or airlines or wherever they're held, and then compare those to destinations that they actually need tickets to? And he gave some example, Denver to Dublin in August. So can people do that for you? Is that out there?
I'm sure there's something out there. I feel like I have seen something that will give you like some different options, but I like to just, I mean, again, I'm going to Denver to Dublin. So here's what I would tell that person, like if they came to me, is go to Google Flights. I have a free, I think it's familiesflyfree.com Google Flights download tip sheet on how to use Google Flights, but get a sense of what your options are. You want to start to understand what's a high price for that, what's a low price. And you, like, I've been doing this for London. I've been watching for 6 months to see what the price has been from New York to London. Well, when it went way down, I was like, now's the time to book, right? It's like couponing. You get a sense of what a low price is for a product and what a high price is. And you always want to buy when it's low. And the same thing with airfare. So you want to start getting a sense of that. And then you want to see like, okay, what airlines are flying there? Which ones are the cheapest? Do I want to take a nonstop? Do I mind if I have a connection somewhere? And I will do a lot of what we call repositioning in the travel rewards jargon, where instead of maybe flying from Denver, you get yourself to New York, because New York is always going to be your cheapest option to get overseas. Or you could do something like get to London. Dublin's a good option too. London or Dublin are the two cheapest usually to fly into in Europe. So if you can get there, then you can take a discount airline once you're over in Europe. Or if you were in London, you could take the high-speed train to Paris, that kind of thing. Pay a lot less once you're over there, rather than trying to say get from Denver to Paris or Denver to, you know, wherever else you're going in Europe. So it's not that much work to, if you take the flexible approach, if you feel like, oh, I've got to check every points program and see how many points it's going to be in Delta and how many it's going to be in American. And then that gets overwhelming and you'll probably quit, you know, and doing it my way, again, you might spend more points. Then maybe it's not the absolute lowest points option to do it, but it's a whole lot simpler. and you get to pick any airline and any time you want. That's where I'm love it so much.
Okay. And I'll jump in and pretend like I'm an expert too, even though I don't have the answer. So I'm pretty sure that Chris Hutchins on All the Hacks has mentioned on one of his podcasts about services or companies that help out. And I know Kevin, and I think he's like, I have the points. He's like, I don't want to spend time looking, even though Len, you mentioned a pretty simple approach. He's like, I have some money that I could spend on this and I would rather just like pay someone else to do it. So there are some services out there and I think you just have to hunt around. So Kevin, I'll follow up with you later if you haven't figured it out already. And then the other thing is there's a business idea for folks out there. So if you are really good at figuring this stuff out, then people will pay you to do it. And they'll probably pay you whatever, couple hundred to $300 to like figure out the points and then book it. I'm sure like people can get started doing that. And if you're savvy at it and you enjoy it, then there's a business idea for you. All right. So one other question, which Lynn, I think you partially answered, and then we'll sort of move over to some of the changes coming in 2025 and beyond. But this is from my friend Rakesh, who asks about the Capital One Venture X rewards and the best way to use them. So it might be a little bit outside of your scope, but I think you're probably familiar. Rakesh also mentions that Chase was easier to use their points and rewards for Hyatt and United. So do you have any expertise around the Venture X card?
Yeah, those are two of my favorite cards. So yes, I can offer there. So, you know, you're going to get more value out of your Chase points than you will Capital One. Capital One miles are worth 1 cent. Now, the benefit of Capital One is it lets you erase any travel charge. So that could be Airbnb, for example. It's difficult to come up with a way to use points to pay for an Airbnb. That's a way. You could book a cruise. You could use your points to cover the cruise. So kind of things you can't normally book in miles and points. That's a good use of it. There's a way you can do Disney park tickets and stuff through Capital One. But again, they're worth 1 cent. Now, I really like that card, particularly for the airport lounge access, the Venture X. That's a great, I think it's the best card for airport lounge access. It's the best deal. Now, Chase is my favorite system overall. If you transfer Chase points to Hyatt, that's where you will get your best value out of anything. So we stayed at the Andaz Peninsula Papagayo in Costa Rica last spring break. We spent, it was 29,000 points a night. Here's an example of them losing their value, as we talked about before. That's now 35,000 points a night to stay at that same property. So when right before we went, I looked to see what the cash price would be per night. It was $2,200 a night. So we spent 87,000 points, and you could argue that we saved 6,600 points. Is that $6,600? Am I doing my math right?
$2,200 times three.
Yes.
A lot.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And so like, that's the best value I've ever gotten out of points ever. Okay. So yes, that's a great way to, but you have to transfer it over to Hyatt and book Hyatt direct in that case. But there is a benefit to booking direct instead of through a third party, particularly when it comes to hotels. We won't go down that now, but, and here's another, this is a real, I think it's a great secret here, is Chase has a pay yourself back feature on most of its, all of its cards. Not all of them let you use it in the same way, but you can really put any charge on your Chase card, be it travel or anything, and you can use this pay yourself back feature to use your points to pay for the charge at 1 cent per point, which is the same value you get on Capital One. And Capital One is restricting you to travel only. This literally lets you, you could put your dining, you could put your attraction cost, your whatever, things that wouldn't code as travel. So now, is that the best value of your Chase points? No, but it's the same value you're getting over on Capital One, but it's just more flexible. So
For the Chase points, I have Chase cards personally. So is Hyatt the best sort of value? So you transfer over to Hyatt and then use your points there. Typically, that's the best value. Is that right?
Yes, that's the best value that you'll get out of Chase points. And it's by far, Hyatt is by far the best hotel chain to book in points. They're kind of the Southwest of hotels, if you will.
Okay. And then can you give like one or two other examples aside from Hyatt that are also good values on the Chase side?
Well, Southwest is probably going to be your best one. And see, this is why I like the Chase system so well, because you can move your points from Chase over to Southwest. I don't teach people to spend on a Southwest card, and most people are doing that. If they've heard about Southwest and they know about the Southwest Companion Pass, they think, oh, I need to get a Southwest card and put all my spending on that. Don't do that. There's better ways to get the Companion Pass through a couple of card bonuses. Be done with it. And then put your spending on your flexible card instead. So it's so much smarter to put your spending on your Chase card that you can still move those points over to Southwest if you need them over there. Or if you don't need them over there, you can move them to Hyatt, or you can use their portal to book anything, or you can use that pay yourself back feature, right? So you have complete flexibility there what to do with them. So if you move them to Southwest, Southwest points are worth 1.5 to 2 cents each. So that's still better than you would get in their portal. It's better than you get with pay yourself back. And if you have a companion pass, those points are really worth double that, because two people are going to fly on that point. So you could say they're really worth 3 to 4 cents each. So now you're getting into the territory of the Hyatt points value. So I think those are your two best deals going with Chase in terms of transfer partners.
All right. And before we move on, you mentioned booking directly with a hotel versus a third party. Can you cover that really quick?
Yeah. So what I'm saying, I think this is going to be a big thing for 2025. People need to pay attention to, because I saw a lot of this happen in 2024. People are booking hotels through third parties, not necessarily, you know, it can be through a travel portal, could be through Expedia. It could be through southwesthotels.com. They have a site where you can earn 10,000 points, Southwest points per night if you book through them. Any kind of third intermediary, you know, company. So they're showing up at their hotels and they're not having their room, or they're, you know, I had a member who booked a hotel in Hawaii and she had paid for breakfast. Well, when she showed up, they didn't want to give her the breakfast, you know. But I've literally had people show up, they don't have the room, they're full, they're out of luck. And what's happening is the hotels, if they can sell that room directly, they would rather do that, because then they're not having to pay the commission to the third party. And so they're just going ahead and doing that and not mentioning to anyone that they've canceled your room. Sometimes you might get a notice ahead of time that, sorry, your room's been canceled, and you at least have a minute to try to come up with a different plan. But I've seen that happen way too much in 2024. So it is a benefit to transfer to Hyatt, book direct with them. This is where, say, like using a Capital One card, you can pay directly to the hotel, just charge it to that card rather than booking in their portal. That's a direct booking, right? You can still use your points to pay for that charge after the fact. So there's some ways around it that still allow you to book, but also let you use your points too. That kind of help with that. I'm still booking things through third parties, you know, in some of these portals. And what I suggest you do is you call multiple times direct the hotel directly and talk to the front desk and make sure they have your reservation.
Got it. Okay. So let's talk more about the trends. And you mentioned a couple things about the crackdown on airlines with add-on fees and delays and some other things like that. And I flew Frontier not too long ago, and we had to pay extra, like $20, just to take off on time. It was crazy.
No, you had to pay extra? Denver's a tough one anyway, though, with the delays and stuff, isn't it? You guys have so many flights coming in and out of there.
Oh, yeah. So what's going on with the airline add-on fees and the crackdown?
So, I mean, last year, the government put in place some mandatory things that airlines have to do. Like if your flight is 3 hours or more delayed, they have to give you a credit. It has to be their fault. So unfortunately, weather doesn't count in that case. And they, you know, were working toward making sure families could always sit together. They're required now to, you know, display any fees that they're charging, as is Airbnb or any kind of vacation rental, that has to all be up front. They can't, you know, have you book your flight and then, oops, now you have to pay to have a seat or to check a bag and all of that. I don't know if that will remain with the new administration. We'll just have to watch and see. But I think it's going to be important in 2025. What I'm encouraging my folks to do is, if you have any kind of inconvenience with an airline, maybe bags are lost or delayed or, you know, canceled flights, delayed, ask them for some kind of compensation. Make sure that's part of your routine. Make sure you follow up, because they're not great about responding. And then if they say they are going to send you something, follow up, make sure that they actually do. And so that's another way that you can get a lot of free flights. So I teach my folks on Southwest exactly how to deal with Southwest. And Southwest is generally great. They have their mess ups like everybody else, but they are usually fantastic to deal with, and they do want to properly compensate you for it. They're not jerks in any way. And so to always ask, and then you can collect these credits together and use that to book free flights. So that's a whole other way to do it besides miles and points.
Okay. And I'm trying to think of some other details around that. With the compensation, can you give us like a starting point of the scope of what we should try to ask for? Like, they're going to try to lowball you. This is a negotiation, right? So you can go back and forth. They probably have some leeway. So what's your approach? And you could make up a scenario again that maybe is a common one.
Well, I mean, the Department of Transportation, I can't remember if it's $75 or $100, but they have to give you in there for a 3-hour delay. So that you don't really get to, like with Southwest now, we don't get to ask. You just fill out a form, send it over. You don't get to put in how much to ask for. Before, interestingly, before this rule was in place, you could get really great credits from Southwest. I sat next to a woman on a flight one time who they had to cancel their spring break flight to Disney, and they ended up having to drive down, and I was on the flight coming back with her, and they gave them $1,500 per person. That's insane.
Wow,
and so we try in my, I have a membership where I teach people my simple system. And so we try in there, like when people experience delays, to share, okay, how much did you get? So we each know how much we can potentially ask for, you know, like, well, this family got 250 and I only got 100. Well, that's not fair, you know, so go back and ask for the 250 kind of a thing. But you should be getting, I would say, at least $100 per person for any kind of significant delay. And another thing to know is if they cancel your flight, you are entitled to a full refund, even if it's a non-refundable flight. And they're going to try to say that you can just get a credit or whatever. And you have to know to say, to ask, no, I know I'm entitled to a full refund here back to my original form of payment. And they have to do that. And you can complain to the Department of Transportation or threaten to if they don't want to do that. But we saw a lot of that during, you know, the beginning of COVID and whatever, is how to all those cancellations.
Anything else around upcoming changes over the next couple years or anything that we should talk about as well?
Well, I'm really excited about Southwest flying to Europe. They are making a lot of changes, right? That we talked about some of them, but so they announced that they're going to be partnering with different airlines throughout the next couple of years. So the first partnership they announced was Iceland Air. And so up till now, if you don't fly Southwest, you may not realize they don't fly to Europe. They do fly internationally, but mostly to Caribbean destinations, Mexico, and they do go to Costa Rica. So the idea that we could use our Southwest points to fly to Europe is very appealing. So we have no idea if that would mean we could use our companion pass. That would be beyond amazing if we could use that. That'd be a heck of a deal. But so there, you're going to fly Iceland Air using your Southwest points. They haven't given us full details, but they always stop in Reykjavik. So you'd have to stop, I'm sure, but they do fly to all the major spots in Europe. And when you look at the current cost to fly Iceland Air to Europe, and if you look at what Southwest points are valued at right now, we're around 30,000 points round trip to fly to Europe. Now, I don't know if that's what it will be. This is our best guess looking at how things are right now, but it's like to Rome, to London, to Paris. And that is a really good deal to get over to Europe. So all of us Southwest nerds are very excited about that. We can't wait to see how that's going to work.
Okay. Another topic is around lounge access, which you touched on a little bit before. And personally, I actually have not been flying as much as I used to. So I don't spend as much time at airports. And typically, I'm flying from Denver to maybe Atlanta or even Cincinnati, which tend to be like fairly big airport. So I get direct flights. I'm not sitting around too often. So I've been surprised. I have a United card. I get 2 passes per year and I hardly use them because I'm not sitting around at the airport. However, the few times that I have been, it is nice to go to a lounge. So can you talk a little bit more about using lounges and or just maximizing the value that you might be able to get from them?
Yeah, so lounge access is an interesting one because it's really changed here over the last 3 to 4 years. So there's the Priority Pass, which comes with multiple different cards. The Amex Platinum, Chase Sapphire Reserve, and some other cards. Well, there's so many people that have Priority Pass access now that those lounges in large part have become overcrowded and just not great. Like, I don't know if we're spoiled from having done this for a while, but it's really not much better than sitting in the main airport. They don't really have much to eat that's appealing. It's on a gross, just open bar with a million people. And so those have sort of lost their appeal. Now, what I'm really excited about, and I don't know, have you been in the Capital One Lounge at Denver?
I have, yeah, a couple times, yep.
Okay, what are your thoughts on that?
It was great. It was brand new. I think it was within a few months of it opening. So yeah, the food was good. They had some variety for the beers that they were serving there, you know, without paying, because I think I've had some friends that got into whatever, some lounge, and then they just had like cheap beers for free, and then you had to pay for like good drinks or whatever. Yeah, so the food was good. It was a little bit crowded, but it was very nice, and I enjoyed my time there, and it was a good place to like get out of the rest of the area. Bathrooms were super nice. I'm trying to think of other details. And of course, they have like the snacks at the end that apparently you just like grab whatever you want and like fill up your backpack, which some people did. I think I got like a pack of nuts or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. It's great.
So that's why I have not been in one. I have not gotten to be in one, but my members have been in all of them, and they say the same thing that you did. Like, very good reviews, a little crowded because I think they're popular. But that's another big reason why I like this Capital One Venture X, is you get that lounge access. And Chase Sapphire now is making some of their own lounges too, and I've heard great things about those, but just not very many of them yet. So I think it's going to become more important to get access to these types of lounges that are much nicer as the other ones fill up. And the Venture X card's annual fee pays for itself. And so it also includes Plaza Premium, which is a different lounge network. And I have been in some of those. They're mostly overseas, but those tend to be really nice. So I've been in one like in Rome that was just amazing. They would make you anything you wanted, and it was huge, and very different experience. So I think that's going to become more appealing, to have some of these cards that get you into their special lounges beyond Priority Pass. I think Priority, like Amex Centurion, would be another one that would be better than the Priority Pass has become.
And with your family flying around quite a bit, how often are you in the lounges? Like, do you pretty much go every time you're at the airport?
No, we definitely don't. And we fly out of Indianapolis, which has no lounges at all. We used to be able to, they used to have the benefit where you could get like a $28 credit per person if you had the Priority Pass at select restaurants. And so we had a little bar there, and it was part of it. And I would go just get us all our waters and drinks for the flight for free. That was my trick. We usually just do it like you're saying, if we have a connecting flight somewhere and we have enough time to lay over. So I don't know, we've done one in Las Vegas, which was recently. We did do one in Atlanta. That one was pretty nice. And other than that, we're not spending a whole lot of time either. But I agree, like, it is nice to get out of the chaos at the airport, charge your devices. And it would be nice if you could take a bottle of water from there onto your flight or whatever, at least. But they don't all have that. Some of it's just cups of water. So,
right. Yeah. And the size of whatever various lounges. I was in the United Lounge in Atlanta. And it was pretty small, like overall, but it's a little bit quieter in there. And of course, it's not a big hub for United. So there's other, lounges by United that are much bigger in other places. So, okay, very good. Well, as we're wrapping up here, is there anything else that you want to mention that I didn't ask you about before we let people know where they could find you and stuff like that?
The only other thing to think about for 2025, and I could be wrong on this, but another thing I saw a lot last year was problems with Airbnbs, just in terms of, I don't know, I feel like we're going to see a shift back more toward hotels. I think we went far Airbnb with the pandemic. And so I saw, again, a lot of people show up to an Airbnb and it not be as advertised. And while Airbnb was very good about working with them and getting them refunded and repositioned and everything, it's a bummer of a way to start off your vacation, you know, to have to figure out now where are you going to move to. And then we have this, a lot of cities are cracking down on them. They have really ramped up the fees that they're adding on. So I don't know. I think just be aware of that. Do what you can. I'm a big fan of just getting firsthand information from someone who's been there recently. And we do that inside my program. Members share where they've been. They lead webinars. You can ask other members for recommendations, but even of like, what Airbnb have you stayed in that was good, you know, somewhere, can even be a great way to try to avoid finding yourself in that situation. And there's also, I think safety is becoming a problem with that. Like we went to Turks and Caicos a couple years ago, and it was a big problem there of Airbnbs being robbed while people were sleeping.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah, because they're kind of, you know, if you're in a hotel, it's more secure, there's more people around, et cetera. Airbnb is just kind of off to itself, and they know which ones are Airbnbs, and they come in, take the stuff that's not, we always keep all of our stuff in our bedroom if we're in an Airbnb with us now because of that. But
okay.
So just a possible another trend.
Gotcha. Okay, Lynn, this has been great. You taught me a lot about using points, and I'll have to, you know, review Southwest if they actually fly where I'm trying to go. But you do have a cool sort of a freebie, a thing that could help people out. What is that?
Yeah, so I have a guide to simplifying travel rewards, because that's a thing I hear a lot, is people just feel overwhelmed by the information out there and they don't know where to start or which programs to focus on. And so this is just 5 tips that I've put together of what you can do with your own strategy to simplify. And so if you'd like to download that for free, you can go to familiesflyfree.com/milehighfi and you can download it right there.
Perfect. That sounds good. And I assume people will join your email list then. What kind of stuff do you put in your emails when you send them out?
I share a lot of questions and answers that I get. So I do quick videos answering common questions. So you'll get one of those a week. I'm also big on kind of dispelling what else you might be hearing online. For example, people are always saying that, you know, certain companion pass offers, like for example, Southwest will have sign up for a card and get a 2-month companion pass. And everybody else in the world is saying, this is a great deal. You get a free companion pass for 2 months. And I'm saying, don't take that offer. That's not a good one, because I can show you how to get it for 2 years. And when you sign up for that Southwest card, you're burning your ability to get that card again for a period of time. And that's not a good use of your application, if you will. So I often say the opposite of what I feel like is being set out in the world, because it's what I see is in your best interest and not necessarily in the banks or the whatever company, you know, airline or hotel or whatever wants you to do.
Got it. Okay, perfect. And last question here, and then I'll let everyone know where they can find you, and we'll link up to all the things that you mentioned. But you mentioned your membership a couple times, and the thing is, like, information is free, Lynn. Like, we could go figure out how to do some of this stuff. So, like, in your membership, what value are people getting that is on top of just the pure information?
Yeah, so the biggest benefit that you will get from my Families Fly Free membership is learning my system. So, like, I have systematized this. And I tell you exactly what to do in what order to jump to the finish line of being able to fly and really stay for free as well. We definitely focus on flying for free. And then as you get more advanced, you might want to delve into staying for free. But we give you a personalized plan that's specific to your family. You tell us what cards you have or don't and what you've done thus far, how many people are traveling, where do you want to go? And we send you a PDF that's specific to you. And then we have support. These are things that I feel like we're missing out in this space. Like, there are a million blog posts and podcasts and videos you can watch, but which ones do you do? And in what order, right? And then if you have a question, how do you get that answered? And so we have a team that, and you interact with me, where you can send questions at any time and get a quick response, get an accurate response. We do have a community that's very active with hundreds of families in there. And so you can post in there and hear what they have to say. And it's a small enough group that it's not overwhelming. It's not like posting on TripAdvisor and then having no idea, you know, the hundreds of thousands or millions of people and if they know what they're talking about or not. And then we host live webinars every month and do all kinds of fun activities. It's kind of like a travel club, if you will. But your money, your monetary value comes out of learning how to fly for free. And I'd say our members on average save $7,500 in the first year. And I just had, she's a longtime member, but she just totaled up a savings of like $23,000 in 2024. That's insane. Wow. My total from 2024 was 11,000.
Gotcha. Okay. And who are the best people? Like, I don't have any kids. It's just me and my wife. And we usually just kind of fly separately because we're codependent with our dogs. We like stick around and one of us stays with Georgie, the dog. So who is the best sort of person for the membership?
Anyone. What's interesting is while it's called Families Fly Free, I mean, I really feel like everyone is a family, right? But we have singles, we have a contingent of singles, we have single parents, we have couples with young kids, we have couples with, you know, school age kids, college retirees, we run the gamut, like every type of person. And I do on my podcast have a lot of their stories. I love to interview my members because they're all different. And so if you check those out, you'll find someone in there that you can relate to. Like even we have a contingent of travel sports people, you know, who have kids that are involved in this stuff and they save a ton because they have to fly like every month to go to these different tournaments and whatever. So, or to do college visits, that's another popular one. So there's all kinds of different ways that you can use this and save.
Got it. Okay. Lynn, this has been awesome. Where should people find you?
My website is familiestravelfree.com. There you can find more videos and content and articles. And if you want to learn more about my membership, you can go direct to familiesflyfree.com. And then just generally on social media, it's familiesflyfree.
All right. Great. We'll link up to all that stuff. And thanks again, Lynn.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High 5 podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually, we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer. This show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. All right, Lynn. We don't know each other really at all, but you sent an email and I'm curious how you found out about Mile High Fi.
From some of my members have suggested you guys. I tend to have a lot of Fi people. I think it's a similar mindset that's involved in travel rewards as it is with Fi.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. That's the way to like grow a podcast basically is other people telling other folks. But it's extremely slow. And you have your own podcast, right? How long have you been doing it?
3 or 4 years now. Yeah, my Families Fly Free podcast.
Got it. And then you don't consider yourself like in the Fi sort of umbrella. You're a travel oriented person.
Right. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. More, I'm a longtime travel journalist. So I've written about travel for, I don't know, 20 years or something, and then got into the travel reward space in about 2015 and have tried to create a simple way for whole families to be able to do this.
Got it. Okay. So journalist, so you're expert. I saw you were featured all over the place, which is one of the reasons why I agreed to chat with you. I think maybe in the email, I was like, I don't take pitches if I don't know the people, but I saw you around enough where I was like, okay, you seem legit. So by the way, people don't send me emails because I don't want random people on the show or, you know, what happens. I mean, you have a podcast, you probably have people pitching you that have books that want to be on your show. And you're like, I don't even do that content. Is that
for things right? That make zero sense. You're like, do you have any idea what I even talk about?
Yeah. And there's like marketing companies that are just like sending out a bazillion emails. Okay. I gotcha. So just on the travel front and the overlap of Phi, like when did you realize like you have a lot of students and or followers or people in your audience that are from the Phi or early retired and they're like trying to learn more about points? Like when did that happen?
Well, I have one of the women who works for me and has for a long time. She's kind of just been in my space for a long time, but she falls into this financially independent category, and she has a great story of real estate and, you know, getting debt free and all of that. And so I don't know, she and I have just been talking about it for a long time, and I'm just realizing that that's tends to be who I attract is a lot of those people. And I come from kind of the couponing world. And I just think that all of this is a similar mindset of like, how much can you do for how little, right?
Right.
I think that's kind of what it comes down to. And use your money for other things, whether it's saving away for retirement or whatever it is you want to do with it, you know?
Got it. Okay. Yeah, that makes total sense that, yeah, there's a huge overlap. And then people, even if, you know, they're financially independent or they don't need to be as frugal, like we still like to get a deal and we like to like get the best deal possible, even if we could just pay for it. So makes total sense.
Yeah, and you still want to travel while you're saving for retirement, right? You still want to enjoy your life. And this is a way that you can do it without compromising your savings goals, you know?